Below us, the streets of New York and the complex and enormous problems of one of the largest cities on Earth. And across the table from me is the next mayor of the city of New York. Two of the men he will have to defeat in next Tuesday's election are also here. Alphabetically, my guests are Controller Abraham Beam, Democrat, William F. Buckley, Jr., the candidate of the Conservative Party, and Congressman John Lindsay, the choice of the Liberal and Republican parties. Now, before we went on the air today, the order in which the candidates will speak was chosen by lot. Mr. Beam will speak first, Mr. Buckley second, Mr. Lindsay third. Now, opening statements, 2 minutes each, Mr. Beam.
Thank you. This has been a long campaign, and I'm satisfied I've done my best to face the issues and the solutions that will make New York's future safer, more prosperous, and more secure. Mine has been a clean campaign, although I've been faced with a strange and sinister form of attack. As the only Democrat in the race, I'm faced with not one, but two Republican candidates, John Lindsay and William Buckley. Their campaigns have gone off on a strange road, a one-way road of innuendo, accusation, and an appeal to base prejudice. Lindsay is guilty of false and contemptible accusations in this campaign. I couldn't believe it when I heard him say, A. Beam couldn't wait for the passing of Eleanor Roosevelt and Herbert Lehman. I couldn't believe it when I heard him say, A. Beam is responsible for making New York the heroin capital of America. William Buckley is not only pandering to prejudice, but is engaged in the most sinister conspiracy. He poses as a political spoiler, dedicated to Lindsay's defeat, when in fact he's joined with his fellow Republican in trying to capture City Hall for the Republican Party. Make no mistake about it, a vote for either Lindsay or Buckley is a vote for the national Republican philosophies of Mr. Lindsay's Mr. Nixon and Buckley's Mr. Goldwater. It is a vote for the Republican contributors to this New York City Republican campaign who come from 40 states. I deplore Lindsay's vicious lies and Buckley's insidious conspiracy to hand New York to the Republican right. I remember well when the late and beloved Adlai Stevenson said, quote, I believe with all my heart that those who beguile the voter by lies and half-truths or corrupt them by fear and falsehood are committing political treason against our institutions, end of quote. I believe this deeply, and in the remaining 4 days, I'll continue on the high road of issues and facts so that people may decide the truth at the polls.
Mr. Buckley, 2 minutes.
Well, Mr. Denbo, I am involved apparently in so many conspiracies that it takes an accountant to keep track of them. I'm apparently involved in some sort of a conspiracy to deny Mr. Lindsay his ambitions. And I'm apparently also involved in a conspiracy to deny Mr. Beam his ambitions. As a matter of fact, both charges are correct. I'm conspiring with the majority of the New Yorkers to make me the next mayor. And I think that those people who are against conspiracies in the sense of acting together, which is what the word originally meant, are actually showing their contempt for the democratic process. Mr. Beam and Mr. Lindsay get terribly frazzled these days because there are 100,000 of people in New York who are not attracted to the part they are supposed to play and to fulfill their own ambitions. If Mr. Beam will point out to me what one of these, quote, lies I have made, I will make a modest contribution towards the deficit he has piled up during the past 4 years. In failing that, I think that he should be a little bit more careful whom he charges with ungentlemanly conduct. I have been talking to the voters of New York City, and I've been saying, look, I agree there are certain things that are wrong, and I maintain that the underdog candidates aren't proposing to correct any of these things. I do believe in the community spirit. I do believe that the Civilian Review Board has become symbolically that which distinguishes those who are serious in their pursuit of justice and those who are not serious in their pursuit of justice. I do believe that it is dishonest to tell the voters that you can sprinkle around $5, $10, $15 billion or whatever it is Mr. Lindsay at last count had reached. I believe in leveling with the voters. If this is a conspiracy, then let's have more of them.
You have 9 seconds, Mr. Buckley.
I give them to Mr. Lindsay, my final gift.
Mr. Lindsay, 2 minutes.
Mr. Dembo, thank you and CBS for this chance to debate the issues. In these last days of this long campaign, I think it's important to refocus on what this campaign is all about. Now, I claim it's time for a change in New York City. It's time for a change from top to bottom in all of its government institutions and, indeed, in the attitudes of government and of the people. Our city is on its knees. It's a city of fear. It's a city where the people are concerned about their safety and their health and their future and their young ones. It's a city of lost jobs, a city of 1 million people living in slums, a city of bad schools, a government that is bankrupt of both money and ideas. And the alternative in this campaign, 1965, is more of the same with Mr. Beam, who has been part and parcel of this tired, lackluster, indifferent administration, and even worse, because Mr. Beam brings with him the same political machine and clubhouse control that 4 years ago the reform movement was fighting against. And this attack against change is aided and abetted by the radical right. Mr. Buckley's candidacy from Connecticut is a candidacy which is designed to defeat me and therefore to perpetuate machine power and control in New York City. In the October 19 issue of the National Review, Mr. Buckley wrote that better a Beam than a Republican imposter. And I charge that the voters of New York City should look for change and fight for change, and against the forces against change from the radical right and against the machine which fears change because it will strip off the facade of the clubhouse control that we've got in our town. I say it's time for independent government to bring in the best talent. A new era has dawned, and merely getting along is not enough. It's time to look ahead with new ideas and fresh ideas.
Gentlemen, we've reached the rebuttal to these opening statements. Again, 2 minutes each. We start off with Mr. B.
First, Mr. Buckley, I never did say anything about lies with respect to you. I addressed that to Mr. Lindsay. He is the one who's responsible for that. What I did indicate about you is you're prejudiced, which is evidence in your feeling with respect to the residency law, trade unionism, social legislation, and so on. Now, Mr. Lindsay, with respect to your talk about a change, I fought a primary on a change. I went in and got the votes of 327,000 people who made me their candidate. And I got it because I felt there should be a change for decision. And that's what I proposed to make and do. And let me also say that New York City isn't as terrible as you're trying to make it out, because you said so in a letter which you addressed to, and I can give you the name if you want it later, but New York offers something for everybody, you said. It has movement, color, romance, and everything that makes it a great city, and so on down the line. Oh, you even said, permit me to issue once more warning. Visitors seldom find a single trip sufficient. And let me say about the conspiracy of Mr. Buckley, there's nobody more guilty than you, and you know it. You remember what happened the other day in that taped interview when you used your campaign people to go out into Democratic areas with instructions that they should speak to the Democrats to switch the votes to Mr. Buckley? There was nothing more crass than that I ever heard in my life. And your hypocritical attempts to switch the blame by a smokescreen when you're caught red-handed like that, that doesn't stand up.
Mr. Beam, 15 more seconds.
I think I said enough. Let him answer it.
Mr. Buckley, rebuttal time, 2 minutes for you.
Mr. Denbo, I agree that this is a city of fear. And I think that John Lindsay is doing everything in the world that he can to cultivate that fear. Every newspaper in New York is talking about his neat operation of the last 5 or 6 days. That operation is explicitly leveled at the Jewish voters of New York City. Mr. Lindsay has been trying to say to them, in his special kind of shorthand, do you realize that Buckley is really in favor of concentration camps? The single maneuver is intended to take votes away from Mr. Beam on over to himself. So that Mr. Lindsay has become pleased to call all of my attempts to solve some of the pressing problems of New York as one or another form of concentration camp, summoning up all kinds of Nazi visions of horror aimed especially at members of the Jewish race. The next time I send a check, I'm going to address it to the during the summer to the Herald Tribune Fresh Air Concentration Camp. Because if one calls rehabilitation centers, health centers aimed at trying to do something for people who are not whose lot is not being improved in New York, then I suggest that special efforts are necessary. But I do charge Mr. Lindsay with making this a city of fear by trying to persuade a lot of innocent people that they should vote for him in order to get in the way of what they understand to be my objective. My objective is to do something for the city of New York and to give New Yorkers an opportunity to vote without fear, without reference to race, color, or creed, and without being terrorized at night or having Lindsay-stimulated nightmares because of the so-called concentration camps, which are going to be staffed by people who will give special attention and special treatment to those people who languish in the city without hope.
Mr. Lindsay, rebuttal, 2 minutes.
Now, let's face the facts of where we stand. I'm running a campaign that calls for change because change is needed. And no matter how much Mr. B may deny the facts remain as the figures show. There is one murder in this city every 14 hours, one rape every 6 hours, one theft every 3 minutes. And I charge that New York is afraid because crime rises faster here, and there are more major crimes than in any other city in this country. Just last year to this year, there was a 15% increase in crime, and in the last 10 years, a 30% increase in crime. 100,000 middle-income families have left New York City. 18,000 jobs a year. The city is near bankruptcy. There is no long-range fiscal planning and no program planning. And the administration, of which Mr. Beam has been part and parcel, has to shoulder the responsibility for this. And at the same time, Mr. Buckley's candidacy is an ultra-right-wing candidacy that is furthered by all of the power and pressures of Goldwaterism and aided and abetted by this kind of literature received from Louisiana under the name Conservative Society of America, signed by Kent Courtney, and 6 members of the Birch Society on the letterhead that charges me with being pro-communist and pro-socialist. And just yesterday, there was a fresh mailing of this kind of literature to Republican voters in New York City and subscribers to this kind of material. Out in the streets, in community centers, I have been called Judas, pro-communist, pinko, by people wearing Buckley buttons and carrying Buckley banners. And no matter how much Mr. Buckley may dismiss this and say that it amounts to nothing but my complaining about his kind of campaign, I say that this is a radical right business that comes into New York City, which is designed to destroy liberalism and to destroy my candidacy.
This is a WCBS radio debate. We've heard opening statements and rebuttal statements. Let's turn now to the body of this debate. I'm going to ask you three gentlemen a number of questions. And I'm going to limit my questions to the issues of this campaign. Again, you'll have 2 minutes each to answer. First question. It has been charged that the people who live in New York City are indifferent and apathetic. What specific steps would you take as mayor of New York City to lift our city government and the residents of New York out of this apathy? And we'll start with Mr. Beam.
During the course of my campaign, I issued what I thought was one of the fundamental programs which I intend to put into effect, and that is to put into the charter a new framework of government to get people of the city involved, both residential and the business community and labor. I did this because of the fact that I believe that one of the problems of the administration in the last several years has been the people have been too far removed from their administration. And so I had recommended that we set up local community advisory councils throughout the city, which would meet periodically and which would be composed of people chosen in the community and deal with every problem involving services and facilities in that community. We would open the doors of the departments to them so many could be settled at that level. Then I would meet the chairman, as the mayor, meet the chairman of each of these committees, myself, regularly, perhaps monthly or even more frequently, so that in that way I would get it firsthand, the problems which are concerning them, and be able to get to them before they develop a crisis, into a crisis. Now, with respect to the business and labor community, I would set up an economic advisory council composed of business as well as representatives of organized labor who would meet regularly with the mayor, and the purpose of which would be to discuss ways and means of keeping and attracting business and creating more jobs. In this way, I'm confident that the apathy of the public could be overcome where such apathy existed. I'm confident there'd be enough interest in the problems and that the mayor of the city of New York would know what is bothering the people and be able to get at the problems to solve
them. Mr. Bean, thank you. Mr. Buckley, apathy in New York City, 2 minutes.
Well, I happen to think, Mr. Denbow, that one of the reasons for the apathy in New York City and elsewhere is expressed by the person of Mr. Beam himself. That is to say, Mr. Beam is squarely in the tradition of Roosevelt and Johnson and Kennedy. And all three of those gentlemen and Mr. Beam have increasingly sought to misconstrue the final function of government. The final function of government is, in my judgment, primarily regulatory and, to a considerable extent, compassionate. But it is not a substitute for one's own energy, not a substitute for one's own morale, not a substitute for one's own sovereignty over one's own affairs. I have issued 8 or 10 position papers on education, on fiscal policy, on police, on housing, on most of the major subjects, and each one of them seeks to begin by seeing what are the rational limits of government. Now, nobody is going to ever recover hope if he becomes persuaded, for instance, that any mayor of New York can cause him to be educated or can cause him to be rich or can cause him to be specially advantaged. All a mayor of New York can do is to see that there is justice and to see that there is opportunity and to see that people don't get way in the way of the opportunity, to see that monopoly labor unions, for instance, of the kind who are backing Mr. Lindsay, don't get in his way, to see to it that oppressive taxation of the kind that Mr. Beam has from time to time sanctioned doesn't get in his way, so that one of the primary responsibilities of government is to inhibit itself sufficiently to persuade people to know that they are the sources of their own hope and that any consummation of a true serenity has got to be the result of their own spiritual battle, which they will win with reference to their own counsel and their own inspiration.
Mr. Lindsay, the apathetic New Yorker, 2 minutes.
I believe that we must put an end to the indifference of all of our people to their neighbor's lot, to the block's lot, to the community's difficulties. We must come to an end of a period when people will shut off the lights and pull down the shades when they hear the cries of a Kitty Genovese or the cries of a nurse on Welfare Island being dragged off to another borough to be tortured. And I believe we have to do what other cities have done, which is mobilize all of the talent, all of the professions, all of the business skills, all of the labor skills to come to the aid of the city and of the community. Other cities have done this. Pittsburgh was losing jobs and people, and middle-income people most especially. And they harnessed all the talent that they had, and they got it moving again. They stripped away the bureaucracy and the layers of governmental fat that existed there. I say that no politician who's a district leader in a political clubhouse ought to hold a job in the city of New York at the same time that he's a district leader. I say that the machine just layers New York City and its government with no-show people who do not get the city moving forward, who never ask the question, what can we do to help the community, only say, what can we take out of this system of government to pass around in the clubhouse. And that's what Boss Buckley and Steingut and the rest of them are all about. And that's the stake in this campaign. I wish to do what I've done in my own congressional district, which is to establish local mayor's offices in each neighborhood, staffed by the neighbors themselves, volunteers, housewives whose children have grown and they have time on their hands. I've done this in my congressional district on a street-level office. Young people, students, high students, high school students and college students, postgraduate students, aided by foundations and by universities, are willing to do this. I think we should have an urban core of young people. I have supported and fought for the Peace Corps, and I've counseled many, many a young person to join and help them join. But I say now is the time to do this in our own city, which desperately needs help and the involvement of its citizenry.
Gentlemen, next question. Mr. Buckley will answer first. The national impact of the election in New York City next Tuesday has become a popular conversation piece. How do you see it, Mr. Buckley?
Well, I doubt that any serious Republican, any mainstream Republican, any longer considers Mr. Lindsey a Republican in a meaningful sense. If Mr. Lindsey is a secret Republican, then I think it is the best that's the kept secret since Mother Fatima's. Maybe 50 years from now, Mr. Lindsey will permit the archaeologists of his estate to uncover some secret document in which he confesses that his true allegiance is to moderate Republicanism. But as of the moment, whom has he pleased? He hasn't pleased anybody who, in my judgment, is likely to have a significant voice in Republican affairs. Mr. Dubinsky, for instance, says that Mr. Lindsey is to the left of Mr. Beam. Mr. Dubinsky, for all his shortcomings, is a hard man to fool on these matters. The nation thinks of Mr. Lindsey as a left-winger, and they must conclude, all Republicans throughout the country must conclude, says Mr. Dubinsky, that the way for a Republican to get elected is to act like Lindsey. The question left begging, of course, is do they therefore desire to get elected? So I think that for a while, a lot of Republicans were uneasy that a victory for Mr. Lindsey would paralyze the two-party system nationally. I think it would paralyze the two-party system in New York, but not nationally. And for that reason, I believe that it has less and less concern for the nation at large.
20 seconds, Mr. Buckley.
Look, if I stop and I haven't gone over, you can just take it for granted that I'm through.
You're being economical.
I'm being economical.
Mr. Lindsey, the national implications of next Tuesday's election in New York City.
I believe that what we're doing here in New York City is making the choice between a partisan form of government, which means continued machine control. It means one-party monopoly rule. And the other choice is nonpartisanship government, fusion government, independent government. Now, our city was in trouble 25 years ago, and it turned to LaGuardia. He was a Republican. He put together a fusion team from other parties. And that's precisely what we're doing here in New York. Other cities in this country of ours, since World War II, have discovered that the way to get themselves out of trouble and moving forward is to get rid of the idea that you do it by partisan methods. You do it by citizen concern and citizen involvement. And they have put together independent, nonpartisan forms of government. Now, Mr. Buckley refuses to recognize that there's any room in this country in municipal government, much less in New York City, which is in the worst trouble of any city in this country, for nonpartisan fusion kinds of government. Mr. Buckley insists that it's got to be a purely partisan affair, Republicans versus Democrats, and in that fashion, he strikes at me, says that I'm too far to the left, that I'm a liberal Republican, and therefore I'm dangerous. His objective is to destroy. And he'll never admit that New York City, under any conditions, is entitled to have independent, nonpartisan government. He would have battled against LaGuardia. Mr. Buckley would have battled against that kind of fusion government. He would have been opposed to it because it represented change and something new. On the other hand, Mr. Beam says I'm too conservative, apparently. Mr. Buckley says I'm a radical leftist. Mr. Beam says I'm too conservative. I say that my position has been one of conscience. I've voted my conscience in the Congress, I've said what I thought was right, and my constituents in a congressional district that is 2-1 Democratic have supported me by a double majority each of the four times that I have run. And I think it's time for New York City to have nonpartisan independent government, regardless of what Mr. Buckley says
Lindsey,
or Mr.
Your
Beam.
Time is up, sir. Mr. Beam, the national implications of the election in New York next week.
First, let me say I'm proud that Mr. Buckley puts me in the company of Kennedy, Humphrey, and Johnson. That's why I think it's important to keep a Democratic administration here in New York City. That's why we don't want a Republican administration, whether it's the Lindsay Republican or the Buckley Republican. Secondly, let me say that I agree there are tremendous national implications in this election. I don't know what Governor Scranton is interested in or why he's interested in who's mayor of the city or Governor Volpe or Murchison or Harvey Firestone or Taft. None of them ever came here to New York City outside perhaps paying a visit, but all of them sent money in to Mr. Lindsay as well as from 40 other different states. So there's a very, very strong attempt here to revive the National Republican Party. Now, let me first say with respect to Mr. Lindsay, don't get the wrong impression and start looking in the mirror wrong. You're no LaGuardia. Yours is not the party of fusion. Yours is the party of confusion. Matter of fact, has on it a man who you yourself repudiated as doing the worst job by having put in the Congressional Record Report with Setso, the worst job in housing, and you put him on as your controller. Now, I don't say you're conservative. You're just confusing. I don't know which Lindsay I'm running against, whether it's the Lindsay who talks about more jobs for New York or the Lindsay who voted against Kennedy's program on unemployment, or whether it's the Lindsay who talks about more housing for New York or the Lindsay who voted to cut the housing appropriation by $500 million. Or it's the Lindsay who talks about better education, or the Lindsay who went ahead and voted against President Kennedy's education bill, or whether it's the Lindsay who was talking about helping the city of New York, the more aid we need, and one who votes about more against more libraries, and so on down the line.
Mr. Beam, 2 minutes are up. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a WCBS radio debate featuring the three major candidates for mayor of New York. Let's pause briefly here for station identification.
This is WCBS and WCBS FM New York.
And this is Joe Dembo. We continue with our debate now. And the next question, is racial balance in the public schools of New York City a realistic goal over the next 10 years? And how would you advance such a balance? Mr. Lindsay, your turn.
I believe that our school system must aim at a goal of quality education and integrated education. And the way to do this is to strengthen our school system from top to bottom, to back the teachers by relieving them of unnecessary paperwork, by promoting them into the teaching field instead of out of the teaching field, by insisting that the only way to advance is to go into the administrative level, and to build school parks and complexes. Originally, on an experimental basis of two or three, they'll be expensive to build but important to build. These are school areas and college areas that are combined from the college level down to age 12. It has a great advantage in that you stop chasing the population around the way we have artificially. Each time we build a new school, then it creates more problems on school lines. I don't think the answer is forced long-distance busing for small children, as Mr. Buckley continually says, or argues that I support. I believe that the answer is an intelligent housing, building low and middle-income housing in every area of New York City, so you reach towards integration in housing, breaking down the barriers in the ghettos and the vicious cycle of the ghetto, building school complexes wherever we can, and reaching towards the best system of school teachers in the country. And this really means backing the teachers. At the moment, thanks to the inadequacies of our system and of the present administration, 7,000 school teachers leave our school teaching system every year. This can and must be changed.
Mr. Beam, the question is, racial balance in the public schools of New York in the next 10 years, is it a dream or is it reality?
I think it can be achieved very, very nearly within that period. Everyone agrees there must be quality and integrated education. The question is how to go about getting it. There are many ways. We issued a paper on education in which set forth that one of the things we must concentrate on is to get more classes and broaden the area where pre-kindergarten teaching is to be given down to the third and fourth year students so that when they get to the kindergarten, they're able to compete with the children who have had a better cultural background, that we should have smaller class sizes, that we should get experienced teachers into more of the disadvantaged areas so as to give the youngsters there a better opportunity to learn, that our high school system must be changed, that instead of a vocational high school, we've got to have a comprehensive one and stop using the vocational high school as a dumping ground, as now is being used. The Allen Report must be implemented. I, too, have taken a position that there should be no mandatory busing. That is not the answer. There is available almost 14,000 to 15,000 seats which could be, if parents want to send their children to, voluntarily. Let me also say that Mr. Lindsay has been talking about not enough done for education in schools in our time and condemns everything. In my time, when I came with this city, the budget of the school system was $180 million. Under my aegis, it's been up to over $1 billion, five times as much. Teacher salaries have increased from an average of $4,000 to almost $11,500. And with Mr. Lindsay talking about all these figures, that he, all this amount of money he'd be giving, which incidentally, if we followed him, we'd be having to give $1 billion more in taxes today.
2 minutes and no more, sir. Mr. Buckley, 10 years from now, what about racial balance in the public schools?
You will, I trust, have noticed that neither Mr. Beam nor Mr. Lindsay answer that question. Incidentally, Mr. Lindsay keeps saying, he's said now this on every single occasion that I've been with him, that he always votes his conscience. The trouble is, his conscience isn't very well informed. I have no doubt that he's voting his conscience. Maybe the difficulty is with his conscience, not with himself. Mr. Beam and Mr. Lindsay hate that question, you will have noticed. They really do dislike it. They both have now finally come out fairly unambiguously against a compulsory busing of students. But on the other hand, they come out for the Allen Plan. They come out for educational parks. Now, how are they supposed to get to these educational parks, I wonder, if not by busing? How are we going to have the Allen Plan, which calls for switching the 633 system to 444, if that doesn't mean busing? The answer is, of course, that compulsory busing is implicit in their system. Now, let me give you an honest answer to the question, how much integration will there be 10 years from now? And that is, nobody knows. Nobody has the faintest idea. Because segregation, whether it's in housing or in schools, has mostly to do with the extent of a people's clannishness. And that clannishness is something which I think will break down under the force of education. That is to say, people will recognize that prejudice is essentially stupid, that to think of other people in categorical racial terms is primitive. Mr. Lindsay, on the other hand, continues, curiously enough, to do that, for instance, towards the Jewish people. He is constantly addressing the Jewish people, as we know from all the newspaper accounts that seem to admit it, and keeps thinking of them as a group that he can deploy by, as I said a moment ago, invoking the shadow of the concentration camp. There must not be any compulsion, Mr. Denbo, but there must only be an attempt to reconcile the races.
Mr. Buckley, I'm sorry, your 2 minutes are up, sir. Next question.
Harmony.
You are talking to a working man who lives with his family in New York City. He has heard of people getting killed in elevators, of armed robberies in broad daylight, of assaults on subway platforms. You are talking to this man about solving the crime problem in New York City. I'd like to ask, what are you saying to him? First, Mr. Beam.
We issued a very detailed paper on our solution for the crime problem. It's divided in two parts, one affecting the police department. In connection with the police department, we would motorize it instead of the situation now where they only have about half or less of the number of patrol cars needed and have smaller sectors so that patrolmen can be seen on the streets very frequently. We would institute the digi-dialing system so as to get help very quickly, a better communication system, and I would continue a policy which I had begun in the police department, and contrary to what Mr. Lindsay states here in a real in a circular and states falsely about that I had not been for the release of patrolmen. I began that program during my time. Now, the second part of this would deal with the most important cause of crime, and that is narcotics. Narcotics addiction accounts for at least half of our crime, and in order to solve it, we must start a new revolutionary method. We must treat the addict as a sick person, not a criminal, and punish the pusher mandatorily. And we must recognize its importance, and I want to set up a Department of Narcotics administering the dosage to the narcotics at the specified places, hospitals with psychiatric and other care on a withdrawal basis. We also would make use of all drugs, the methadone drug and other drugs which may be found to be effective. In any event, this program, which has not been carried out by the state under the bill which is now on the books for 3.5 years, must be implemented by them.
Mr. Buckley, conversation with a man who is disturbed about the crime problem in New York.
Since Mr. Beam finished off talking about the narcotics problem, let me also talk about that first, if I may, Mr. Denbow. I agree that it is the source of crime, and I have myself come reluctantly to the conclusion that it is a federal problem. It's a federal problem because narcotics is spread from person to person without any reference to state lines whatsoever. I also believe that the crucial insight into the narcotics problem is that contagion is primarily from addict to addict rather than from pusher to addict, and that under the circumstances it has got to be considered a plague situation, and that plague situation naturally invokes the powers of the government to protect uninfected people. I also agree with Mr. Beam that one oughtn't to deal with addicts as criminals, although in point of fact some of them are criminals. But neither is it to deal with somebody as a criminal to quarantine him if he has smallpox or bubonic plague or leprosy. And I do believe that the narcotics problem is serious in this dimension. That is to say, that if we don't attempt to quarantine it by isolating narcotics cases, then we are going to have a problem which might be almost unmanageable in the years to come. On the wider business of crime, we need, of course, to support the police beyond the banal sense of doing so. We've got to persuade those people who are responsible for detecting criminals that the entire community desires their success, which means that we've got to do something to eliminate the turnstile justice by which people come 15, 16, 17 times before the same judge and get exiguous sentences. We've got also to do some thinking. I'm away. I've got 8 seconds. We've got to do something also about the fact that the civil rights addicts have made it increasingly difficult to effect convictions.
Gentlemen, my questions deal with the issues of this campaign, which is now drawing to a close, but the civil rights problem, per se, has not been an issue in this campaign. I'm sorry, Mr. Lindsay. I give away my next question. Let's go back to the earlier one, and it's your turn. 2 minutes. I apologize.
Well, first of all, Mr. Denbow, I'd like to say this to Mr. Buckley, that Mr. Buckley's statement that I, in defending myself against his ultra attacks and those of his people and his supporters in this campaign, that I am appealing to Jewish voters, is an offensive and irresponsible comment, and I'll ask him not to make it again. Now, on crime. Crime is the most serious problem that we have in our city at the moment. Fear stalks the streets, and the double padlock is the symbol of New York at night. Safety is a matter of right of our people. It's not something that is given by a benevolent government. It's something the people have a right to. And here in the most crowded city in the world, you've got a right to walk down the street without fear. Or the housewife has a right to go to the incinerator and come back to her apartment door without fear. If Mr. Beam has a new idea on this subject, where has he been for 20 years? What have they been doing in City Hall for 20 years? Now, I say, and I say this on the basis of examination of other cities. I've sent teams out to other cities to examine what they're doing. And other people have come to this city from other areas to tell us what they do. And we are behind. We're way behind. And I say we ought to have a central communication system electronically arranged, as does Chicago, which cut their crime rate by the installing of this. And this provides an instant communications to each area and each neighborhood and each block with fast mobile patrol systems, additional police. The policemen at night should be equipped with walkie-talkies, which is very simple and not expensive, and they're not heavy to carry. We must get modern. Chicago saved $180,000 in just consolidating one or two forms alone, and our police in New York are burdened with 2,500 forms. We have no systems analyses. We have the most antiquated police system of any modern city. And I charge that it's massive indifference in City Hall, of which Mr. Beam has been a part, that has brought this about, and we must create safety regardless of cost.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Again, my apologies. It was inadvertent. I started the question. The civil rights problem per se has not been one of the big issues in this campaign. Indirectly, yes, but certainly not as an overriding issue. Why not, Mr. Buckley?
Well, I really don't know why it hasn't. It may be that it is a sensitive area in which Mr. Beam and Mr. Lindsay have chosen to leave alone for the time being. I write on the subject continuously, but it's true what I write about doesn't necessarily become an issue. Now, somewhere along the line, Mr. Lindsay, in the course of his self-infatuation, decided that he can give me instructions about what I may say and what I may not say. You did hear him a moment ago instructing me not to repeat a certain charge. Well, I'm going to repeat it, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to repeat it because I think it is related to the problem of civil rights. I can find, Mr. Lindsay, 500 references published in the press during the past 2 weeks to the effect that he is trying to appeal to the Jewish voters. And he's trying to appeal to the Jewish voters by scaring them. He is trying to do to the Jewish voters what the Ku Klux Klan has been trying over a generation to do to the white people in the South, to keep them all scared that if the Negroes make certain progress, make certain improvements in their lot, that the white people will be wiped off the face of the South and lose control of their own destiny. And by the same token, Mr. Lindsay is in there saying, in effect, to the Jewish voters, vote for me, because this is over here an ultra-rightist who is trying to bring bloodshed to the city, whose statements are reminiscent quotes of some of the worst moments in history. What do you think he's talking about? Everybody else knows. And Mr. Lindsay can't have it both ways. He can't be here and get away with this hypocrisy by which he assumes that we are all willing to play his game and not knowing that he is making a straight appeal to the Jewish voters. Now, let Mr. Lindsay, having finished giving me instructions, perhaps receive one from me. Cut it out, Mr. Lindsay, and then I will cut it out. Stop this silly business about the ultra-rights and concentration camps and that poor little wretched pamphleteer in New
Mr.
Orleans
Buckley,
trying to take over the city.
Mr. Lindsay, the question was, why do you think the civil rights problem has not been a major issue in this campaign?
Well, I think it is a major issue. I think the problem of reduction of tensions in our city, the problem of making our Negro population feel part of the mainstream, wanted in all respects, not shortchanged in city services, that some effort is being made to break down the vicious cycle of the ghetto, to cure the problem of 1 million people living in slums, indeed those people living in 42,000 buildings that were declared unfit to live in 65 years ago, then in all respects our city is a city of tension and fear. I think it's fortunate that enough energy was displayed this summer to forestall a summer problem in New York City, such as they had in Los Angeles. And I flatly charge, Mr. Buckley, that your efforts have been designed to increase that kind of tension. And those ultras around you in this campaign who have fomented tension in the streets, who have been antagonistic to any change at all, who have been so glaring in hostility to any integration in the schools whatsoever, any program designed to look forward, only those efforts designed to retreat, have increased our problem in New York. in your efforts to continue to reduce this whole campaign to a partisanship level, to a strict fight to bring about your brand of Goldwater Republicanism, period, aided and abetted by every Goldwater force you can find and those way beyond it in this campaign, have hurt the possibility of reform, have damaged any hope of change in New York City, has tried to cut this campaign into something that is base and not relevant to the issues, and I say that when you do that, you simply perpetuate some of the wretched conditions that exist in this city.
Mr. Lindsay, I'm sorry to cut you off. Mr. Lindsay, sir, 2 minutes are up. Mr. Bean.
Mr. Lindsay's made an attack on me a little while ago in connection with the police. Apparently, Mr. Lindsay believes that there should be interference in the police department, that they shouldn't be independent and run by their proper police commissioners. We've had the finest police commissioners in the last dozen years I've ever heard of. Mike Murphy, Steve Kennedy, Frank Adams, and yet Mr. Lindsay says that they weren't run well because we at City Hall didn't butt into their business. I had a lot of confidence in them, and of course, as Mr. Lindsay knows, nobody but the mayor is the executive authority of the city, that a budget director is an appointed position. He doesn't run city agencies. But then apparently it's this lack of knowledge of government, which I am very much concerned about, is not having. Now, in connection with the question of civil rights, it's interesting to hear Mr. Lindsay postulate and sermonize the way he does. The one thing that had the greatest effect upon helping the civil rights situation in our city this year, and certainly there's a lot more can and will be and should be done, was the anti-poverty program. The very program that you, Mr. Lindsay, voted to reduce in half, but it was only by grace of a Democratic Congress that they voted adequate funds to double the amount you are ready to give us for New York, plus the fact that you are ready to eliminate the youth corps provision of that bill, the very thing which had the greatest effect on the tensions during this summer.
Now we are ready, gentlemen, for closing statements from each of you. We are going to start with the candidate who was scheduled to speak next when we ran out of time, that is before closing statements, and I would invite you to take 2 minutes and 15 seconds for your closing summation. Mr. Buckley, it's yours.
I find a lot of things that Mr. Lindsay has said and that Mr. Beamer said difficult to follow, but mostly I find difficult to follow Mr. Lindsay's suggestion that I'm against something new. Precisely, I am for a whole lot that is new. The whole purpose of my candidacy is to offer what I consider to be genuine solutions to the city's problems. And Mr. Lindsay, seeking to bring something new to the city, immediately wrapped himself up with the coils of the preceding administration and with a whole series of left-wing ideologues who have had the city in clutch now for a generation. I say let's break out of those traces and let's try to get a New York in which people do take pride in their communities, in which they have a chance to think about education without reference to other corollary social goals, in which there is some opportunity, some hope, to escape the inflationary costs of government that are driving so many people outside the city. The kind of hope that would come to a city if that alert minority, perhaps majority, but certainly minority, were to come to life. Each vote cast for the Conservative Party, Mr. Denbo, is going to be a continued thorn at the side of anyone who is elected mayor. It will be there constantly to remind them that they cannot give way to their excesses, that they've got to show a little political courage, that they've got to respect the rights of the individual to lead his own life without being told at every minute what to do by the government, by the bureaucracy, and by the tax, and by the tax authorities. There is no one, I think, who, comparing my programs for New York, those of the Conservative Party, against those of Mr. Lindsay and Mr. Beam, would fail to arrive at the conclusion that this indeed is something new. Precisely, I don't want more of the same, and I maintain the only way that we can achieve something that is new is by voting for the Conservative Party ticket.
Mr. Lindsay, your closing statement, please.
I deeply believe, and this is why I'm running, that New York City needs a change, and it needs it desperately, from top to bottom. I don't think we can go on the way we are going. Mr. Beam's candidacy represents more of the same. Mr. Beam has been part and parcel of the present administration, and Mr. Beam brings back the return of the same machine that he fought against 4 years ago. And I say that if that machine comes into power, all institutions of government will be in a stranglehold, and New York City will continue to decline at a faster rate than it has even now. I believe it's important to get going in many directions. Yes, we want rent control, and we should have it. The 15-cent fare should be maintained for our people, because if it's not, it'll drive more people onto the highways and out of the subways. There should be mandated free tuition, because education is at the top of the list. And incidentally, Mr. Beam, I supported and voted for the federal aid education bill that we have here, and we should begin to use it in this city. There's a 30% dropout of our school children from our schools, 60% from vocational schools. Now, where does the responsibility lie? The responsibility lies with those who now wish promotion to the highest office in our city. And I say that our change that we must have must get our city moving forward and stop the decline. I say that we should have a quality of living in New York City, that cities are for people and for living, that cities are a place where it should be joyful and you should not be afraid. I say that we can build 160,000 new housing units in 4 years, and I pledge to do that, just as I pledge to serve a full 4-year term, and I would hope to be able to come back to the voters and ask to be reelected at the end of that. I believe we can get on with the job of building classrooms, 12,000 of them new. I believe that we can build school parks. I believe that we can have quality education and integrated education. I think we can put an end to the fear and the tension in the streets, and I think that we can give all our people a feeling of belonging to the government, a feeling of participating in the role of government. At each block level and neighborhood level, I believe our people care sufficiently to work for a new and better New York.
Mr. Beam, closing statement.
First, Mr. Lindsay, I thought you should know that I challenge you to debate in a free-for-all debate so I could nail down many of the lies you've been throwing around, one of which, by the way, you mentioned about rent control. I happen to have here a circular which implies that I'm against rent control given out by your backers, which, of course, is another lie. And the education bill I had reference to was the Kennedy bill you voted against. I'm sorry, Mr. Buckley, I couldn't offer that debate to you because this was Mr. Lindsay's time. He purchased it. I didn't have the money to do that. This has been an unusual campaign for me and for New York City, largely because there are two Republican candidates. Mr. Lindsay and Mr. Buckley have shamelessly used this campaign in New York City as part of a national Republican power struggle. Lindsay and Buckley share common roots, and make no mistake about it, in the national Republican philosophy. Both supported Nixon over Kennedy, and Lindsay sat silently by in 1964 while we fought Goldwater. He didn't. I am the only Democratic candidate for mayor in this campaign. I am the only unequivocal supporter of Johnson, Humphrey, and Kennedy, and the Democratic National Administration in this campaign. Thus, the issue between my Republican opponents and myself is clear and basic. I support Democratic philosophies, and they support National Republican Party philosophies. I don't believe that liberal, progressive New York City should be surrendered to National Republican philosophy of any stripe. I don't believe we should give control of this city this complex one to inexperienced hands. My 35 years of public service are well known. By the way, Mr. Lindsay wants to tear it down in 3 months. I am proud of my record. My running mates Frank O'Connor and Mario Procaccino have exceptional records of service. The Republican slates have nothing to match it. We know what is good in New York. We want to make it better. We've got the experience and know-how to make it better. I have no personal ambitions except to serve the people, and I'm absolutely convinced that a Democratic administration in New York City, working with Washington, will make New York a better place to live.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard the candidates. Their comments on the issues. Next Tuesday, New York City goes to the polls. Complete election returns on WCBS Radio starting at 8 o'clock. This is Joe Dembo. Stay tuned now for Up to the Minute with Lou Adler and Dick Reeves.